You're listening to the Business Forum Show, broadcasting worldwide on Blog Talk Radio, on Live 365, and on the TBFS Radio Network. This top-ranked business radio broadcast features the obstacles and challenges that business owners endure on the road to success. On behalf of David Ford, Jeff O'Brien, Allison Lindstrom, I'm Kevin Hunter. Stay tuned. The Business Forum Show is next. TBFS Radio Network. Kevin Hunter with Jeff O'Brien on the Business Forum Show, and we're talking about buying a business today. There's a lot of different things to take into consideration when you're buying a business. How structuring the payments so you can actually afford to buy it. There's non-compete issues. Another area, transition assistance. I think of this in many cases. I have visited with business owners that talk about, you know, hey, I'd like to just jump in and start running the place. And I know many, many clients that their business would stand to lose probably 25-30% of their clients if the business owner, the existing business owner, just walked away because they're doing business with that company because of that person. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different issues. So let's kind of start in the beginning here, Jeff. Let's talk about some ways that you can structure the payments you can actually afford the business, the importance of that.
Well, there's two different ways, really. There's, you know, a lot of folks go to a bank and get financing, mm-hmm. and you know we there's conventional financing programs as well as the Small Business Administration, the SBA type loans, mm-hmm. That might be available, and that's one way of doing it. The other is to have seller financing. If the mm-hmm. if the seller is willing and able, the seller may be willing to finance all or a portion of the purchase price. It may be a way for the seller to get more than what they would get if the bank was just financing it and the purchaser was handing them a check, mm-hmm. so they could be able to do a promissory note with maybe 6 or 7% interest and be able to make more on the business than otherwise, mm-hmm. by financing it themselves. There's certainly more risk in that for the seller because if the buyer defaults, then the seller is out a portion of the purchase price, mm-hmm. but that is one way to do it. And from the buyer's perspective, it depends on what they qualify for. I'm more of a proponent of getting a loan from a bank, whether it be conventional or SBA, and just paying the seller so that issue is resolved, mm-hmm. Rather than continuing to owe money to the seller. It's always, in my opinion, it's always easier to deal with the bank in terms mm-hmm. of loan covenants and things like that than just a party who's not in the business of lending money.
Right.
But in the right circumstances, it does work. And mm-hmm. then if you get into where there's part bank financing, part seller financing, that gets a little more complex in terms of security interests and subordinated interests and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that's financing, how you pay for it is a key issue in terms of buying a business.
I was actually visiting with a business owner who was obviously doing seller financing. Somebody else had bought their business, and she had done seller financing. I was really kind of blown away by how much she had to say about how this ought to be done and that ought to be done and everything else. I was really going, wow, I don't think I would want to be the person, having bought your business from you, with all this, you know, contingencies and everything else that was involved in it. It appeared to me to be very messy. So at least in that situation, I could see exactly why, if I was the buyer buying a business from her, I would have wanted to finance at a bank and get her out of the picture altogether.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you're dealing the financing issues comes up, some of the other issues, you know, you're going to want to do, typically you'd sign up a purchase agreement, and, you know, we'll talk in a minute between asset versus stock sale, mm-hmm. but you'll have a purchase agreement. And then you'll do due diligence, and you'll look and see if are there any liens on any of the assets and the equipment, on anything like that. Because, of course, especially if you're going to be dealing with a bank, mm-hmm. You know, those liens are going to have to be satisfied prior to closing. If I'm representing a buyer, I want those liens satisfied, period. So there may be, if you're doing seller financing, there may be enough of a down payment that has to be made in order mm-hmm. to have those liens cleared up, and then have the seller finance mm-hmm. the balance. That's going to determine how it's financed as well.
So let's talk a little bit about this asset versus stock sale. What's the difference? What are some of the things involved here?
Well, there's a couple of key distinctions. An asset sale is where the buyer is buying the assets of the business, buying the equipment, the inventory. It could be trade names, intellectual property such as trademarks or patents. Maybe accounts receivable, maybe not. You know, and assuming minimal liabilities, maybe leases, and that might be it. Or, you know, equipment leases and property leases. Other than that, all the liabilities stay with the seller. Again, hence why you have to clear liens out before you close. And I would say 90% of business sales these days are, or that I handle at least, are asset sales. A stock sale is where you're selling the stock of the company to new owners. And with that goes all assets and all liabilities. There are business reasons for doing it. I'm working with a client right now where it was, for non-legal reasons, in their best interest to structure it as a stock sale. So there are circumstances that do merit that do warrant a stock sale. So that's key is terms of, it really comes down to cutting ties with the liabilities of the existing business. An asset sale, that's going to happen, subject to any kind of agreement to assume certain liabilities that are needed to continue operating the business. With a stock sale, you're taking everything, warts and all, when you buy the stock.
So let's visit a little bit about non-competes and the importance of those, because you're buying a business from somebody who obviously has a lot of capacity to go out and do this again if they wanted to.
That's correct. And, you know, we've talked, you know, you talk about employee issues and non-competes. The, you know, public policy doesn't always favor non-competes in that context. When you're talking with, talking about somebody who's selling their business, the courts are much more lenient, much more in favor of enforcing the non-compete under the policy of someone shouldn't be able to sell their business for a handsome chunk of money and then go down the street and reopen it and take all the customers. So whereas you might get away with 2 years in an employee context, you might get 5 years with a sale of business context. But the idea is, if, you know, a certain amount of the business is going to be goodwill, you know, especially if it's a service business. And if that person is competing with you, then why the purchase would be of no value unless you had that agreement not to compete as well, which then, of course, you may also want to have some assistance from the previous owner. We might do, it might be a trade-off. Okay, you'll give me a non-compete, but I'll keep you on as a consultant or an employee for 6 to 12 months to help
ease
the transition. Now, you have to be careful with that, because obviously this is someone who has run the business, owned the business, and you have, if you have other employees there, you're going to have some questions about who's in charge. So you want to have,
ask you, do I ask
you? Yeah, you want to have, you want to minimize, you want to have maybe as short as possible of a transition period. So 6 months might be better than 12 months, but that's a good way of one of those, you know, one of those compromises of, okay, I'll pay you for a little bit, maybe even a little bit more than you otherwise get for this business, but you're also at the end of the day not going to compete against me for a period of time too.
Kevin Huntel with Jeff O'Brien visiting about buying a business here on the Business Forum Show. You can contact Jeff O'Brien at jobrien@lohman.com. Again, Kevin and Jeff here on the Business Forum Show. Thanks for listening.
HydaGrip.com.
What's HydaGrip, you ask? Here's Don Dorsch, creator and founder of HydaGrip.
HydaGrip is self-adhesive clear silicone strips applied to the underside of any strap where it normally lands on your shoulder. The HydaGrip strips grip onto any dry surface. Not only are they strong and tear-resistant, they are incredibly flexible and conform to your shoulder, yet sturdy enough for everyday use. HydaGrip won't damage your bag or clothing and is hypoallergenic. Add HydaGrip to your bag and it will stay on your shoulder. No more slipping, sliding, or adjusting. HydaGrip works on purses, messenger bags, baby bags, gym bags, backpacks, etc. Whether you carry a designer bag or a department store bag, they all slide down your arm. With HydaGrip, your bag will finally become hands-free. Now you will be able to shop and even reach for items with ease, knowing that your bag won't slide down your arm.
For more information, visit HydaGrip.com. Again, the website, HydaGrip.com. That's HydaGrip.com.
HydaGrip.com.
Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show with a few thoughts on how your customers might be viewing your organization.
When Bain & Company surveyed a number of businesses and asked how their clients would rate their service, the companies stated that 80% of their clients would rate them as superior. However, when the customers themselves were surveyed, only 8% of them gave these same businesses a superior rating. That's quite a gap, but it does serve to illustrate how little companies really know about what their customers are thinking. Can you afford to run your business without knowing what issues might be causing your customers to want to leave? Can you afford to be missing out on opportunities for growth simply because you aren't talking to your clients? Of course, the answer is no. So get started today talking to your clients. And if you're not sure how to put this together or construct it, give us a call at the Business Forum Show, 763-267-7260. Or look us up on the web, thebusinessforumshow.com. We'll be happy to hook you up with resources to help you get in touch with your clients today. Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter. As host of Business Talk Radio, I get the opportunity to cross paths with some very unique owners. Scott Favilla, the owner of Computer Rangers, is a perfect example of this. He founded Computer Rangers in 2005 after working on computers for the previous 15 years. Since then, he's acquired numerous certifications to become the expert that he is today. But that's just the beginning of his story. You see, Scott is a disabled Army vet. He was deployed to the Middle East and sustained injuries that kept him hospitalized for 6 months. This didn't stop him from attending St. Cloud State University and later starting his own business. Scott Favilla isn't looking for sympathy. When he talks about Computer Rangers, he pridefully states that customer satisfaction is his number one goal, and he works tirelessly to earn his clients' business through the quality of service he believes they want and deserve. This is the attitude that has made him a successful business owner today. Scott Favilla. Find him online at computerrangers.net or call Scott today at 763-245-6042.
You've been listening to the Business Forum Show, broadcasting worldwide on Blog Talk Radio, on Life 365, and on the TBFS Radio Network. On behalf of David Ford, Jeff O'Brien, and Allison Lindstrom, I'm Kevin Hunter. Thanks for listening.